daily hour-long call-in talk program. We're now accepting applications for this volunteer position. The next host will be the voice of Tuesday's show and join a stellar lineup of folks who engage listeners in conversations on social, cultural, and political issues of importance every day of the week. We're looking for someone who is curious and well-informed, comfortable speaking on air, someone who can think on their feet and has at least 5 hours a week to prepare and host the show. And of course, we'll need you to be here every Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m. Apply by May 2nd. To find out more information or apply, go to wortfm.org/talkhost.
Good morning and welcome to Her Turn, a program of news and information by and about women. I'm Sandy Janigold. And today we have an interview with Marielle Barnes, who is the Associate Professor of Public Affairs, the Assistant Professor of Public Affairs at the Follett School at UW-Madison. Good morning, Marielle.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. What we want to talk about a lot today is research project you did on the manosphere.
Yes.
So first of all, we need to know what the manosphere is.
Oh, great question. So the manosphere, how we define it in our paper and kind of how they define themselves, are a group or network of like men's blogs and websites that believe that men are subjugated in modern society, and they exist under the gynocracy. And so usually we think about modern society as being a patriarchal one that restricts women and oppresses women and subjugates women. But they have flipped this on its head. And instead, they believe that men are the victims of, the gynocracy. So that's kind of what the manosphere is.
And how did you decide to do this? Where did the idea come from to do the research?
So I did a project when I was in grad school for an ethnography class, and I did an online ethnography of a manosphere website called A Voice for Men, which at the time was quite prominent. And this is a website that's focused on men's rights, and so they were very concerned with like false rape allegations that they think are, you know, happening all the time, which is not true. They're very concerned with father's rights. They were very concerned with like men having to pay exorbitant alimony payments. And so I kind of, for about a whole semester, I kind of hung out on these forums and read all these posts and what they were talking about, which was kind of abhorrent. And then I wrote that up and as a final term paper. And then I didn't really do anything with it for a long time. And a new professor joined our department where I was at. And she said, "Have you ever heard of this thing called the manosphere?" And I was like, "Yes, I have. I've done this work." And then we decided that we were going to collect a whole bunch of sites. And so I hung out on all the more sites. And so we collected over 100, I think 130 odd sites that belong to the manosphere, and kind of like looked at them over time, what they're saying about women, what they're saying about men, whether they have social media. And then, that the paper comes from that data. And so the paper that we wrote is kind of this first cut of like, what are these different groups? How can we categorize them? How do they interact with each other? And what is their connection with violence against women and different types of violence against women in society? Because I think these groups are often responsible for, or they dislike women, right? And so it follows from that that they would think that violence and harassment is okay towards women.
Back in the early 90s, when I first started on WORT, there were a number of very vocal groups in Madison that felt this way. And They, and as I said, they ended up getting some of the women's organizations defunded because they were discriminating against men and things like that. And then they just seemed to kind of disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there a resurgence of that, or how did they come? I'm assuming they didn't go away, but did they? How did they come back up again so prominently?
Absolutely. So there were a couple websites even beyond Madison, like international mm-hmm. groups that were present in the 90s. One was like the Fathers Coalition for like children or something like that. I can't remember the exact title. But there has been this resurgence, and what we attribute it to is the rise of the internet, and particularly the rise of web kind of 2.0. So blogging in particular, and Twitter and social media. And so before, like, there were always these men who were misinformed about the world, let's say, or like annoyed at feminism and annoyed at women and or misogynistic towards women. But I think they found it very hard to find each other.
Mm.
And so a lot of times these groups will attract people when they're very annoyed or angry, but translating that into a sustained movement is difficult, mm-hmm. particularly when you're isolated. But what the internet has done is it's made it really easy to find like-minded people. And once you find like-minded people, I think it kind of becomes this continuous process where more angry people are coming in, you remain angry, you continue thinking that men are discriminated against in society, and it kind of builds momentum, basically. And the internet was the mechanism through which that happened. And we can see, when we look at our data, this peak of websites and blogs that happened around 2012, 2013. So starting around 2008, they seem to take off, and then it peaks, and then it drops off again. So there definitely was this resurgence in this belief that men were discriminated against in society, and it seems to be more sustained than it was potentially in the 90s.
Okay. And I had heard someplace that young men use social media more as a way of communication than any other way.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably true. I think that's probably true amongst all young people,
mm-hmm,
actually,
mm-hmm.
Men and women. The concern, I guess, is what are you consuming and how are you interacting with that medium? So I think it's very easy to find people. If you're angry, it's very easy to find other angry people on social media. Likewise, just the same as like other issues. I think social media has been a great thing for feminist organizing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that, like, I think algorithms in particular are also pushing young people in certain directions. And particularly, it's very easy to push people, or these algorithms and social media want eyeballs all the time. And so the algorithms are designed to keep you looking at the app for as long as possible. And what you see is people being pushed towards more and more extreme content in order to keep them engaged with the platform. And so I have not done studies on this, but there have been studies done on YouTube where it's like, if we have a clean profile that only just shows you like whether you're a man or a woman, like how long before it starts pushing you towards like extreme right-wing content and misogynistic content. And I can't remember what the exact number of clicks is, but it's not very many. And so you start viewing that and you think you're thinking critically, and all of a sudden, yeah, you're down this rabbit hole of misogyny and patriarchy.
Hmm. What was it like to read all of that stuff?
It was interesting. I think I'm quite good at compartmentalizing. Mm. And so, I would read it and I'd be like, that's stupid. and wrong and pig-headed. And then I would kind of go about my day. I also had a team of RAs who were working with us, and they had a very similar reaction. These were undergraduate students at my doctoral institution. And I would check in with them every week because the stuff that you're reading is pretty abhorrent. And every time they'd just be like, it's just so ridiculous and so over the top that we can't even take it seriously. It's just so weird. And a lot of these sites talk in this kind of pseudo intellectual way, like they try to make themselves seem super smart and they use all these big words. And it's like, you just wrote a five page blog post that you say nothing in, and yet they think they're being super smart. And then the comments on these blog posts are like, oh my God, dude, you're so right. And it's like, what did you even say? I don't understand. So, and that's coming from an academic who can be quite esoteric at times.
But it has led to physical violence in some cases. Is that true?
Definitely, yes. And so we can see that there are different kinds of groups in the manosphere. So there's like men's rights activists. There's like men going their own way. Men going their own way. They think that if you tie yourself to a woman ever, all she will do is, like, she's a bloodsucker and she's just after your money, so it's better never to engage with a woman. Then there's pickup artists, who are these men who want to just sleep with lots of women. They think the way you become an alpha man is to sleep with women. They, like, have all these techniques for picking up women as well that apparently work. Who knows if they actually do? And then you've got incels. And so definitely certain groups can be linked to violence. So incel violence, a lot of the kind of mass shootings that happen, particularly when it's like young men, they have connections to the incel movement. So I won't say the person's name because I don't want to glorify them, but the person who did the Isla Vista shooting in Chicago, like, he wrote a whole manifesto that talked about how he wanted to get those B words and kill them because they wouldn't, like, sleep with him and he was ugly. And so, and he had hung out on, like, incel websites before. And so that link is very clear between that shooting and the movement itself. There was I can't pronounce it, and my French is not very good, but the Polytechnique massacre that happened up in Canada. That was an instance, that was kind of before the manosphere, that was in the 80s, but, like, that was an instance where he asked all the male students to leave the classroom and then shot the female ones. And so, like, that's quite very targeted. And then the other groups, it's harder to link them directly to violence because we think they're doing different types of violence. So, like, because pickup artists, their desire is to sleep with women, we hypothesize in the paper that the predominant form of violence they are probably going to perpetrate against them is probably sexual violence, sexual assault, rape. But it's very hard to link that because when people are arrested for those crimes, it's not like they're saying, well, I'm a pickup artist, right? There have been instances where, like, known pickup artists have been arrested for sexual assault. And then we think that other groups will, like, men's rights activists are more likely to engage in kind of harassment. So the website I mentioned before, A Voice for Men, they had a sister website called Register Her. And they were paying people to give them the details of women who had apparently made false rape allegations and then publishing them online so people could dox them and, like, stalk them and harass them. Or they paid bounties for pictures of prominent feminists so you could know who these women were for the purposes of harassment. And so I think those are just a few of the ways that, like, we can link the manosphere to violence against women more broadly in society.
In a case you just joined us, I'm talking with Marielle Barnes, who is a UW professor at the La Follette School at UW-Madison, and we're talking about the manosphere and her research in that. What role does classism and economic insecurity play with these young men?
That's a great question. From our research, from the particular paper we published, it's hard to tell, because it's hard to tell who these men are, because when they were in the manosphere, a lot of them are anonymous, because they were worried about being, you know, canceled, Or they use a pseudonym, which I guess is the same thing as being anonymous. Like, very few actually use their name. And so it's hard to understand, like, what their age is, what their race is, what class they come from. I would in general say that it's probably a wide spectrum of men. There's definitely an age element to it. So more young, I would, from my kind of background knowledge of this movement, say more young men probably fall into the incel category at first. And then they realize that, oh, they're not hideous and ugly, and they can have a personality, and, you know, they eventually, you know, start feeling confident with women, and, you know, they kind of age out of that mentality a little bit. And then other groups, like men going their own way, are a little bit older. I would hypothesize they've probably been married before and then divorced. And that's why they are like, women are bloodsuckers and I don't want to interact with them, right? But you need to have had that interaction with women to get to that kind of mentality. And so age is definitely important. In terms of class, I think it's, a wide spectrum. Like, I don't think misogynistic views are restricted to, say, low socioeconomic classes. I think they're prevalent, you know, throughout society and throughout classes. I know, you know, a number of, like, I've heard a lot of stories about, like, very well-off men, very powerful men who are very misogynistic and commit, you know, violent domestic violence and stuff against their wives. So I would say class here is maybe not super important. And then on, like, things like race, the majority of the movement is probably disproportionately white. There are some African-American, black participants, but mostly it's very, very white movement, I think. And that's also comes into play when I think the Manosphere was a good pipeline for recruiting people, and particularly men, towards, like, Make America Great Again, Trumpism, anti-Semitism, white supremacy, that kind of thing. And so, like, if you're already white and male, like, those ideologies can be potentially more appealing.
And that's what I was going to ask you, is how they, or if they gravitate toward Trump and MAGA. One of the things that was very startling in the last election to many people was the amount of young black men that supported Trump. Does that have anything to do with the Manosphere? Was that a kind of different phenomenon, do you think?
I'm not entirely sure. I think just the gravitation of young men in general was definitely. And the Manosphere, I think, has a role in that. And so we see, like, young men coming out after Trump was elected and saying, you know, your body, my choice, kind of stuff. And there is this kind of younger men's are more voted for Donald Trump more than they have before. Whether race is an important element not in that, I'm not entirely sure. We do see this kind of drop off in these websites being created around 2013. In 2014. And so you have that peak that I talked about, and then it disappears. And we think that's because you didn't need a website or a blog anymore to express these views. These views were starting to go mainstream, like Donald Trump's, like, saying he's going to run around that time. He's coming down that golden escalator thing, doing all the stunts. And so these views are, like, you don't need to be anonymous anymore, and you don't need a blog. You can just say that you hate women and that you want to, you know, grab them by the pussy or whatever terrible thing you want to say. And like the prominent people who were involved in the Manosphere when I was looking at it, you know, way back in like 2014, 2015, a lot of them, like if I go on their kind of social media now, like they've moved away from exclusively like Manosphere and men's issues. And they are much more like they are Donald Trump supporters and they are expressing like Proud Boys sentiments and things like that. And so there has been this shift from just hating women to hating a lot of other people as well. I think it's very easy to hate women. Like, it's not as taboo as I would like it to be. Like, you know, people tell locker room jokes and, like, you know, ha 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 kind of things. And, like, those things are misogynistic and patriarchal, but it's not, you know, outright violence quite yet. But it's very acceptable. And it's less acceptable to, you know, be a white supremacist or to be an anti-Semite. But it's very, once you hate one group and you believe in kind of almost a conspiracy theory that you're discriminated against by women, it's very easy to then think of like, well, I also think, you know, Jewish people are controlling the world or, you know, white people are being replaced by black people. And like, it's very easy to start thinking like there are multiple levels of like conspiracy and discrimination happening to you. And so that's why you have this kind of slippery slope or pathway from Manosphere beliefs to anti-Semitism and white supremacy and Donald Trump and MAGA and stuff like that.
I would imagine that these men that believe this way are probably giddy about the fact that the Trump administration is disappearing women and black people through getting rid of DEI, supposedly. And just anything, I mean, it's almost in now to not mention women anymore or to kind of elevate men.
Yeah, absolutely. Like DEI has been a big problem for these groups forever. You know, they think that it promotes people, women, African-Americans who are undeserving and who are not as good. And they really do believe that men are superior intellectually, physically, in all kinds of aspects. Like men are just, the common refrain is like men are just logical, or men are just like thinkers, and women are just too, you know, the common refrain, women are just too emotional, right? They can't make decisions. They're on their period. And so they really do believe that men are the best and the best gender. And so, yeah, like DEI initiatives and things that promote people are wrong, first of all, and like are promoting people who are undeserving and are coming at the expense of men as well. So like good men are being pushed out of these important positions for people who are, yeah, undeserving and will not do a good job because they can't, you know, they're not smart enough, they're not capable enough. So like I definitely think that aspect of like the current administration and getting rid of DEI is part of that Manosphere gynocracy ideology.
So I suppose it's no coincidence that Doge, Elon Musk's group that's getting rid of so many of the civil servants in the federal government are made up of a lot of young men,
yeah. I saw the like the photos of the young men that they published, and I was like, yeah, I can see that, and why they're doing this kind of work, and yeah, the cuts they're getting or they're doing are going to decimate, you know, a whole bunch of different fields: women's rights, trans rights, you know, looking at racial differences and inequality, even looking at like differences between rural and urban, right, populations. I do a lot of work on violence against women. I was 3 weeks from applying for a grant from the Office of Violence Against Women under the DOJ, and the grant just disappeared. All the funding calls have been withdrawn because it's not a priority anymore, and it's even more than that, right? It's like it is part of this like DEI thing that we don't want to promote research into women, right? I'm not sure if you saw the list of words that came out like a couple of months ago now of words that were banned or like would flag grant applications under the National Science Foundation, but like women and woman and female were all on that list, but man, male, men were not. And so like it's, you can study men, but you can't study women.
And there's a woman that does breast cancer research and was saying that grants that she's applying for can't mention women.
Yeah, which is just crazy. It's crazy that you can't study breast cancer and mention the group that it affects disproportionately, right? But that's another aspect of kind of the manosphere is like, you know, you say, you know, breast cancer disproportionately affects women and we should study it. And then the manosphere would be like, but what about men and prostate cancer? What about men who do get breast cancer, right? Like it's a small proportion, but men do get breast cancer. But it is this whataboutism. Like it's not like women can't, we can't even have breast cancer. Like it's like that's, I don't want to say that's our thing, but like it's the thing that affects women. And so like, but we can't even have research into that, right? And we can't even say it disproportionately affects women. There's this constant kind of, what about men? What about us? Why won't you pay attention to us? That is just tiring for me, at least.
Mm-hmm. And in the couple minutes we have left, I wanted to ask you, have you found any women on these websites or blogs or social posts that support this?
Absolutely. There's quite a few of them. So they're women who talk about being red-pilled. So like the entire manosphere is red-pilled. It's a reference to the Matrix where you take the red pill and you wake up and you see the reality of the situation, right? Which is like women control the world. But women are also involved in it. There's a prominent group called the Honey Badger Brigade where they think that, yeah, like men are discriminated against and they need to be helped. And oftentimes they advocate, you know, well, women, you have to take a back seat. You have to be a loving wife. You have to be a housewife. Your goal is to look after children. It's not to be, you know, out of the house and working and things like that, which is ironic because that's what they're doing. And so I find it a little, yeah, funny that they're advocating this, but the very fact that they're able to advocate it is because of feminist innovation and, you know, driving feminist ideas forward. And I also think that's kind of where, I think that's some of where this trad wife, I haven't done a lot of work on trad wives and things like that, but that's where that comes from.
Mm-hmm. And I just have a minute left, but I want to end on kind of a hopeful note, and I'm not too sure exactly what that is. My mind goes to the hands-off rallies yesterday. Is that a way for us to start?
I think so, like, and protesting, and, you know, I think it's really easy to be depressed right now and pessimistic, and I know we try to make so many, you know, we've tried so hard, and the feminist movement has tried so hard to, like, forward feminist goals, and it seems like they're being wound back, but making sure that we're not being pessimistic and that there are other people who are passionate about this and realize what's going on and are trying to fight it.
Great. Well, Mario Barnes, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All the work you're doing.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here.
Thank you. And now stay tuned for 2.5 hours. First of all, I want to thank Christina Kivlin for engineering the show and Shelley Pittman, part of the WORT staff who came in to help. Now stay tuned for 2.5 hours of Women in Music, Culture, and the Arts with host Dani Biar. For her turn, I'm Sandy Janigold.